Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi everybody, and welcome to the Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel live broadcast or subsequent podcast. Today, we were going to have a three-way chat with Basil and Damo, but it's not working and we can't hear the third person. So we've ditched Damo and we're just going to talk to Basil, and then we're going to talk to Damo in about 20 minutes, half an hour. So we're going to talk about Tour des Géants training. So Damien Hall is an elite athlete, and Basil Heaney is a normal ultra runner, if there can be such a thing. Hi Basil, how are you doing today?
I'm very, very well, recovered well.
Awesome, thank you. It's really exciting to chat to you. Just going to introduce both, just so that we can get an idea of who you are and make you both blush. Tour des Géants is a 220-mile race. It's got 26,000 metres of climb, oh my goodness, and super-duper green runner, litter picker and tea addict Damien Hall came fourth in 72 hours this year, and awesome fellow ginger, normal ultra runner Basil, who only started running in his 40s, completed Tour des Géants in an incredible 135 hours. So that's amazing, Basil. How did it feel to cross the finish line?
It was a long journey to cross the finish line for me, because actually I did the race last year. I was about 20 kilometres, 12 miles away from the end. I went into a refuge to have a quick nap before I did the last finishing straight, and it snowed about a foot of snow and they stopped the race. So I had to walk back down the mountain the following morning. The problem was there's about this much snow and the flags were about this tall, so you couldn't see the track. And actually, I bumped in recently to a guy I know who had gone over just before, and he said it was really, really sketchy and really difficult to follow the route. So safety-wise, it was the best thing to do, but so satisfied to finish this year. Last year, I got the T-shirt, but you know, you never feel like you really finished something if you don't cross the finish line. So like super, super, super satisfied, basically.
Oh, that is fantastic. And 135 hours is just amazing. So we are going to be talking about your training for Tour des Géants today. Get ready to spill the beans and share all your secrets.
Yeah.
But we're also using that as a bit of a hook to chat about you and Damo's amazing new, almost charity, Into Ultra.
Yeah.
So let's just tell everybody about what that is, first of all.
Okay, so Into Ultra, started it with, it was me, Damien, and about four other people, started about 6 months ago. And the kind of central sort of aim was really to kind of improve inclusivity in ultra running. So there's lots of good stuff going on to improve inclusivity with gender and ethnicity, with black trail runners and she races, and felt, you know, ultra running, it's not expensive like Ironman or triathlon, but it's still quite an expensive thing to get into. So there's a kind of financial barrier, and we're kind of thinking, what can we do to improve that? You know, we stand on start lines, and you know, they're not probably as diverse as they really could or should be. And in Damien's words, ultra running is for everyone, is his strap line. So we felt we could do something. So basically, we started something that was aiming to help people, you know, who would like to ultra run. Actually, in some cases, they probably don't know they want to ultra run, but they really do. I would like to ultra run.
I think we all started that way.
Yeah, we did. We did at some point. And then it's slippery slope. Want to ultra run, but can't afford the kit, can't afford the races, can't afford the coaching. If they need coaching, can't afford the courses, maybe lack confidence or skills. So it's to really help people over that barrier. So as I said, started about 6 months ago. Actually, the first thing that happened really quickly was, and this says a lot about the ultra running community, is we now have about 100 partners, races, coaches, authors such as yourself, Claire, who are kind of providing kind of discounted and free places to inter ultra runners. And that kind of just, you know, the 100 or so in 6 months, a kind of phenomenal number who just said, yeah, we'd love to help. Great, great what you're doing. We'd like to offer free places. I think we've probably got free places across 200 or 300 races in the UK now, potentially.
That's incredible. Well done.
Yeah, so we got that, and now 6 months in, we're supporting about 40 runners. Another great thing is about half of them are female, we've got better diversity than the average. Helping a lot of people who have said, you know, ultra running really helped my mental health, or running's really helped my mental health. I'd like to do ultra running because, you know, I want to do more of it. And so, you know, it's just kind of satisfying and sometimes tear jerking to see the stories that you hear of people we can help. So next big step for us is we applied to become a charity. Hopefully, fingers crossed, in a month or two, we'll get that through. And at that point, we'll then take in more donations. We're just working. We have a small fund at the moment that we're using, but we'll take in donations. We'll be able to get grants from England Athletics and the like, and maybe sponsorship too, so we can kind of expand it up. And one of the big challenges we have is actually raising awareness in the people who don't ultra run today that would like to ultra run. We can talk to the ultra running community quite easily because we're well connected. People know Damien, people know you. But in that people who are maybe doing half marathons or marathons, we've got to do those. So that's the plan. Come a long way in 6 months. I'm sure we'll go a long way in the next 6 months as well. But yeah, it's going well.
Awesome. Well, that sounds absolutely fantastic. And how can we personally get behind that and help you?
If you're a race organiser out there and you're not already one of our partners, it'd be great if you're a partner or similarly a coach. If you want to offer help, it could be a free place, it could be a discounted place, the more the better. You may be a kit provider. Again, if you can offer something, that'd be brilliant. If you're a runner, just maybe when we have become a charity, if you'd like to donate or just sort of follow us and spread the word. Actually, as I said, kind of raising, if you know somebody that runs but doesn't run ultras or just runs a bit of ultras but can't afford it, let them know about us, basically. So lots of things that, you know, everybody can do. As I said, you know, I can't think of a better community to launch an initiative like this in, because everybody kind of wants to help. Just like when you're out on the trail or the ultra, you know, everybody wants to help you. It's the same thing that we're finding when we set Into Ultra up.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic and definitely something that's much needed in the ultra running world. I've put a link to Into Ultra in the film description below and in the podcast show notes as well, so you can find out all about it there. And if you are looking for, because this podcast is free, so hopefully it goes out to like a wide range of people. So hopefully if you do need help, then contact Into Ultra and they can get you Into Ultra.
Indeed. That was the first decision I think we made was our name, and hopefully it communicates what we're trying to do. Basically, I think it's got two things. One is to get into ultra, and the other thing is the sort of, you know, mentally I'm really into ultra running type of thing. So it's kind of, it's got this sort of double meaning. Hopefully it gets the message across.
Definitely, it's a great name. It's really, really good. And it's amazing that you guys are just taking the time. It's voluntary, you're just taking the time out to do this. It's, you know, a bit of the park run ethos. It's all kind of everyone giving time and effort and for free. So yeah, it's really, really fantastic what you're doing. And it's really fantastic what you are doing yourself personally as well, Basil, isn't it? I mean, you both, both of you, Damo and Basil, you've both improved brilliantly on last year's performance. So, well, you yours wasn't your fault. Basil timed out for the snow. But yeah. Damo also knocked 16 hours off his time. And we'll talk to him in just a little bit. But I just wondered if you can describe to me, because earlier we were just having a quick chat and you were telling me about the mountains and how beautiful they were. Could you just describe like the scenery and like what attracts you to this beautiful part of the world to do the Tour de Gion?
First of all, it's big. So some of the longest climbs are like 5,000, 6,000 feet long, take 4 or 5 hours to do.
Oh,
just, it's immense.
Yeah.
I love the Lake District, but it's just, you know, you get the Lake District, then it goes up and it goes up and it goes, it just keeps on going. The weather's great, which is something that's a definite benefit over something that mostly great. It did rain a few times. But, you know, you could be up there and you can look around and you see these mountains that are over 4,000 metres. A lot of them got glaciers on them. It's just an awesome. And one of the other things you get is you go from valley floor where it could be, you know, woods and stuff, and you climb up through pastures and then you get to the top and it's like a rocky moonscape, basically. One of the sad things is you see it. There's been a lot of glacial recession in the Alps, and so lots of places are very kind of rocky. Some of the terrain to run over is quite tough, but generally they do the paths brilliantly well. But just I love being up in the mountains. I love the Lake District, but there's something about the Alps that's just, similarly the Himalayas and other mountain ranges, that's just, you know, it's just lovely being up there.
It's incredible,
so,
isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah.
I've run and skied around that area a lot, and it's just love it. Can't get enough of it.
Yeah, it's like the Lake District on steroids, it sounds like.
Oh, very much, very much on big steroids. I mean, the Lake District's beautiful in a kind of slightly different way, because it, you know, it's got kind of more colour to it in a sense. There's something dramatic about the Alps that's just wonderful.
Yeah, and it obviously draws you in. But I mean, you're talking about three or four hours of climbing there. How on earth do you train for that amount of climbing? And, you know, 135 hours, that's what, like 6 or 7 days, and with hardly any sleep. How on earth do you train for that in the UK?
In terms of training, I do lots of kind of hilly events.
Yeah.
I say a lot of them in the Lake District. I did the Lakeland 50 as you did this year as well. I did it with my son. Next year we're going to do it together, the Lakeland 100. I did Great Lakeland 3-day this year. I did Om Light. I had a failed Bob Graham attempt. The weather, that's my downfall. Next time maybe. I did Northern Traverse. I did the Spine in January.
Wow.
So I kind of do quite hilly stuffs. And then I think for the length of time, I don't think there's any particular training you do. It's just kind of trial and error. Mm-hmm. So I've now kind of figured out what I need to do to get. It was 5.5-ish days.
Oh, okay,
to
my
finish.
Math wasn't very good.
roughly. My maths went as well. But we started on Sunday. By Thursday afternoon, so I'd gone through 4 nights. Then I'd had 6 hours sleep. I think, by the way, Damien will probably have done 2 hours for his whole thing. But I just couldn't survive on that. So actually on Thursday night, I slept about 5 hours in two different locations, and then finished it on Friday. But you just have to work it trial and error.
Yeah.
And the thing is on sleep, because I'm not kind of competing to get top 10 or top 100 even, if I get really tired, I just go, I've had enough. I'm sleeping. I've done quite a lot of long events. So I've started the Spine 4 times, finished twice. I'm going back this January to make sure that I get a 3-2 record rather than a score draw. And I've done quite a lot of, you know, longish races as well. So,
So doing the long races.
That's the only way. There's no way you can kind of train for 5 days.
Yeah.
With you just got to go and
a few hours
do it.
Sleep. Yeah, I think Damo had 5 hours sleep in total, but he was then out.
Oh, there we are.
He beat me.
He beat me even on the level of sleep.
But he was out for a shorter time, so he.
It was.
You know,
it was.
If you double his time, double his sleep, 10 hours sleep.
Yeah.
He was just. He was lazy, really, wasn't he? So.
He was.
So.
Well, I think Sabrina Virgie, when she did it last year, I think I read, and she did it in about 80 hours. I read something like she had 20 or 30 minutes sleep across the whole thing.
Oh, she's incredible. She's balmy. She did the Pennine, you know, when she did the Pennine Way record just after COVID. She had about 2 hours sleep on that in about 3 or 4 days. And we were her support team. And we were so knackered because we were like, stop, just stop. But it's hard for the support guys. so like you do lots of these long events, which is brilliant. So that's obviously really good training for like the whole event side of thing. But like during your typical week, like what are we talking, mileage, hours per week? Like, are you able to give like a typical week?
I'm a bit of a numbers geek.
Yeah.
So I do add it all up. So I probably do average about 50 miles a week. But of that, probably about half of my mileage I do in events. I do loads of events. Damien will tell you I do far too much.
Does he coach you as well?
No, he doesn't. I have a coach called Neil Bryant at Centurion, who's fantastic, who kind of works with the fact I like doing lots and lots of events. So I do about 50 miles a week on average, but half of it's in events. Yeah. And that's good. Most of it, when I'm training, kind of running my dogs, basically.
Yeah.
But I live down in the south, so you know, if I need to do hills, my dog wants to say hello.
Oh, that's fine.
There we are.
Hello. Hi.
Hello, little one.
Black. Is that a black lab?
Actually, he's 3/4 lab and 1/4 Vizsla. So he's a very sleek, sleek little chap. Yeah. Actually, he's back there. You can see him back there.
Oh yeah, I can see him.
Where were we? We're talking.
Oh yeah, miles per week, so, 50 miles.
So
a week?
Yeah, I live down the south. It's not super hilly, so I go up to the Lake District as much as I can.
Yeah.
And then obviously do lots of events, which is the way of getting events in the Lake District.
So you're always looking to make really hilly routes on sort of rocky terrain, the kind of stuff you'll be experiencing on Tour de Gion. Yeah.
If I can.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I can.
And do you do any like speed sessions or hill reps or anything like that as part of your weekly training?
Not a lot.
No.
I probably do one a week or something like that. But you know, I'm never really pushing it to the edge. I'm never racing hard.
Yeah.
I'm always competing against the cutoff rather than competing against the person in front of me.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And do you do any strength and conditioning? Because I've just turned 40 this year and I have been like nailing the strength and conditioning because I know that I don't have time on my side anymore. I don't have age on my side anymore. I've got a kid. I don't have sleep on my side anymore. So I'm like, I must do something extra. And I've heard strength and conditioning is like where it's at. Do you do any such things?
Neil kind of got a program for me that includes of speed work and strength and conditioning. And I probably for the first year that I was with Neil, I was kind of quite good at it. And then it kind of waned off. And so not a huge amount.
Okay.
But everybody tells me I should do more. But it's more fun just to go out and run with the dogs than it is to kind of do planks and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. It is. Okay. But I take it you don't get any injuries then, because I suppose if you were a person who was getting injured, then you might be more motivated to do the strength.
I haven't had any injuries for 10 years. I think I'm super lucky. I don't know why.
Yeah, touch some wood.
I could go to an event. So for instance, I did the Tour de Gion and finished just over 2 weeks ago. This past weekend, I did a trail marathon locally, which Damien told me off for and said, that's great. And I said, I'll only go really, really slow. And I got about 2/3 of the way through it. And I've been going quite slowly. And then there were loads of people in front of me. And so I cranked it up to kind of tempo heart rate for the last hour and a half. And I felt fine.
Wow.
I don't know. I'm just lucky, I think, that I can recover quite quickly, not get injured, not do much strength work. At some point it's going to bite me, I think, and I think it might downfall, but at the moment it's working out fine.
That is great news for everybody who doesn't like strength and conditioning.
I accept liability for any recommendation I give to anybody else.
So the training, do you do any training at night? I suppose for the night running, that just comes when you're on these other events, does it?
Yeah, I, as I say, if you do half of the time I do events, most of them are long things. So I kind of got four 200 continuous 200 milers this year.
Yeah.
Plus, that's got loads of night running in it. So, I've just kind of got used to it. It's normal to night run, basically.
Yeah.
You just go a bit slower and make sure you've got the right kit for it.
Yeah, and you talked a little bit about the sleep deprivation just earlier, and that you had a couple of good sleeps on that last night. Is there any way that you can prepare for that, or is it just, does it just come with experience?
I think it should probably just go with a plan and then just execute it, see if it works, doesn't work, modify it next time. I mean, a couple of the things I always try and do, so having done the spine, is and that some people sleep out, you know, in the bird hide at Malham Tarn, or in some sort of, you know, hay barn somewhere. I always try and sleep in checkpoints.
Okay.
And always try, I can't plan my race to basically try and get into a checkpoint at night, because I find it much easier to sleep at night. And of course, in something like the spine, it's so much easier traveling in the light than it is in the dark.
Yeah.
And it's much more enjoyable. So I remember the first year I completed the spine, I seemed to manage to come into every checkpoint between 8 o'clock in the morning and midday, and leave every checkpoint about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And it was just, and it just wasted all that kind of that little bit of light. So I did the same actually on the Tour de Gion. I knew where the checkpoints were, that where I could sleep easily. I kind of worked out, well, if I press it a bit hard at the start, I can get to this one. I think I got to the first. So I did my first sleep on the second night. I got to it at 11 o'clock at night. And it, you know, those 3 hours in the dark before I got there were really, really, really tough. But I chucked in some caffeine tablets and stuff, got there, slept like an absolute baby for 2 hours, and then got up and went on, and then waited till the next night and repeated. But what I didn't do, I should have had 3 hours sleep a night, and I had about 1.5, 2 hours sleep a night. So
is that because you just woke up, or you were like panicked and you were like, oh no, I must set my alarm for 2 hours?
No, I just cut. What's quite good, I remember actually the first time I did the spine, I was really close to the cutoff. So every time I fell asleep, you're kind of just worried about, you never slept really well because you're worried about, you know, sleeping through the cutoff, which actually wouldn't happen because they'd boot you out of the bed.
Okay.
So you've got an hour to cutoff, so we're waking you up and booting
nice
you out.
Oh, that's nice of them, yeah.
Which is good. It's always in your mind. You're kind of worried you're going to miss, you're going to be cut off. But now I'm not super quick, but I'm quick enough to be far enough ahead of the cutoff to just sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then just sleep whatever my body once, yeah, and then get up and go again.
I think I'd probably sleep like 15 hours or something. If I'd gone through the night and then had 2 hours sleep at 11 p.m. the next night, I'd probably just sleep for 15 hours.
it's weird, actually. I remember actually that when I finished, so I'd had, you know, really, really little sleep through the race, I couldn't fall asleep on when I'd finished, because actually as soon as you get to the end, your adrenaline goes high and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just it's weird. Yeah, sleeping is an odd thing. It took me sort of 2 days to be able to kind of sleep properly. I've got somebody banging at the door. Can I just go and grab this?
Yeah, sure.
And
yes.
Then, yeah. And edit it out.
We'll talk about that. Foot care. Yeah, we'll do a lot of editing of this one. That's really interesting because, sleep is one of the reasons why I don't think I would like to do one of these non-stop running events. I really like stage races where everybody sets off in the morning, you all jog about for a bit, and then you get in a tent and you all sleep and somebody snores, and then you all start off again the same the next day. So that's the kind of event that I really like doing. But it is really interesting hearing about all the different sleep strategies that people have. And now yeah. Basil's back, we are going to talk about foot care, because you mentioned that you used to get bad feet, but since you started doing 100 miles, you sort of defeat just sort of are fine now. So how's that worked for you, your feet thing?
That one's a kind of a learning one. So I mean, I used to get, I remember, I think the first time I finished the spine actually, and my feet were just an absolute, I couldn't get my feet into shoes. I had to wear flip-flops to work for days, and my dogs were just forever hovering around my feet because they smelt nice, I think.
Yes, they smelt of death.
yes, something like that. I think for feet, again, it's some of it's learning, but I think for one is to keep them dry, because my feet just, as soon as they're wet for more than 15, 20 hours continuously, they just start to break down. So, you know, be that avoiding puddles or wearing waterproof socks or changing socks, but just try and keep them dry. Also, you know, moisturize them before, file off all the hard bits. Then I use Gurney Goo, but there's lots of other treatments available.
I'm going to start using Trench.
Available Trench.
Yeah. They've just sent me the sample.
Lots of other treatments available. And they that kind of does two things. One, it just reduces the friction, so reduces the chance of blisters. But it also helps to kind of keep some of the water from absorbing into the foot. And then when you get to a checkpoint, socks off, talcum powder on, if you've got enough time for doing this, leave your feet to air while you're there. But on Tour de Gion, it was one of the other lovely things about running in the Alps is underfoot conditions are just wonderful. Oh. It's just dry all the time. Uh-huh. You just don't get wet feet. And it's just, I got one tiny blister in 5.5 days of running.
Wow. That is incredible.
And so, it's just, so much of ultra running is just learning, but it's also everybody has their own kind of personal little protocols and routines. It kind of works for me.
Yeah. And what about the grit though? Because I know it's dry out there, but it can be like the pass can be quite gritty. Do you wear debris gaiters or anything like that?
I don't. They are gritty, but if you just get something in, half a minute to sit down, take your shoe off, chuck it out, and carry on. Might have to do that once or twice a day.
Yeah.
I used to wear those gaiters, but they're just such a faff to put on. And then, I've given up on those.
Yeah, I'm surprised no one's invented a sock with a frill coming down, that like acts like a bit of a gaiter.
Well, I think you can buy socks with a frill on the top or something.
I think they're for little girls, aren't they?
Roll it down.
Yeah.
But there are, I think James Elson swears by, because he did the spine last year, and he swears by, I think it's a Sportiva shoe that literally has a sock built into the shoe that almost like a gaiter over your foot that keeps lots out.
Yeah, that does sound like a good idea.
Yeah.
And then what about the altitude? I mean, the UK is not famous for its altitude. The Tour de Gion does seem to go quite low and quite high. Is there any training that you can do for the difference in height there?
No, I mean, we went up to 3,300 metres. So what's that? 10,000, 11,000 feet. I think, well, actually, the train that you can't, I mean, Damien will probably talk about his little ventilation altitude tent that he put on his head and what, nothing nearly as sophisticated for me. Turn up there 3 or 4 days early and just get up to altitude and get used to it. Mm-hmm. And then when you're out there, go slowly and don't get worried about going quite slowly. I mean, when I remember the last 500 meters up to Col Lausanne, which was the 3,300 meter climb, which on day two, it's probably day one for Damien, but it was day two for me. And you just the rate of which you're going up, you're looking at your watch and going, I'm doing 1 kilometer an hour. It was quite steep. You just it's up there. You'll be done in an hour and a half's time, and you just go slowly, get over the top, and it's fine. I just don't. Lower your expectations is probably the best thing to do at altitude. But some people do get, badly affected by altitude. But I mean, if you're going to travel out there, you might as well get out there early and enjoy the places. They're fantastic places to spend time.
Yeah, it does sound amazing. And it does sound hot as well. You did mention that it's nice weather. Is there anything you did for that, training for that in the UK?
No, actually, we were pretty lucky. It probably got up to 20, 25 during the day at in the bottom of the valleys. Not super, but I have a kind of hat with a flap at the back. But in terms of training, I mean, no, I think that one's principally about the right kit.
Yeah.
I suppose you can train for it. You could sit in a sauna and stuff like that. But it's not one of the super, super hot races. It's not a kind of 30, 35 degree.
Yeah.
Type of marathon de sable type of things. And you get up the hills. Once you get up the hills, there's a breeze as well. So, sometimes when you're climbing up and you're in the trees or the woods, there's no wind and you do feel it. But once you get out onto the pastures, there's normally a bit of breeze up there.
It sounds balmy. And I just want to ask you about kit and food before we come back to Damien. Kit, were there any particular essentials? Like, I'm assuming you would take poles for something like this, a lot of climbing over 5 days.
Yeah, it's about the only, I think one of the very few races I'll take poles on, because it's so steep that you do really need it. What other bits of essential bits of kit? My hat,
yeah.
The sun hat is because you are, you know, there's very little shade once you get above 2,000 meters. You're spending so much time over the, up there, that basically, yeah, you just need something to keep the sun off. Just trying to, I have a Montane Gecko rucksack, which I absolutely swear by. It's fantastic. I'm trying to think of my other bits of go-to kit. Yeah, I know. My other one bit, unusual bit of kit is always buy a pair of shorts with zipped pockets on them, because you can always put things in the pockets. There you go. There's my little pocket. Kit hack.
Yeah.
Because you can never quite have enough pockets around to put, you know, little bits and pieces in.
Yes, and you don't want things to fall out.
Which means you can have things like sunscreen, you know, easily to hand, and Pro Plus caffeine tablets to hand is always another, because the last thing I did would be really tired and then have to stop and dig to the bottom of your rucksack
and then
to get
forget what you were looking for.
Exactly, you're so tired, sleep deprived. What was I trying to do?
Yeah.
So basically, just make life as easy for yourself as possible, to basically kind of get access to everything on the move, basically.
And what shoes were you wearing for Tour de Gion?
I have worn for the last 3 or 4 years Innovate G260, Ultra 260s or something like that. They've got a kind of good tread, but the main reason I like them is they've got a kind of what they call a bomb-proof upper, which has got a really, you know, literally the material they make rucksacks from.
Ah, okay.
Which means that I put 2,000, 3,000 miles in them before they tear.
Oh, brilliant.
Literally, they don't tear. Something else goes wrong on them. So, they do me everything apart from a road marathon or something like that. I'll use those for, basically.
Amazing. And what food were you able to keep down? Like, what food did you enjoy eating on the Tour de Gion? How did you prep for that in your training?
So I use a series of kind of spring energy gels and Vela 40 gels. A kind of range of about six of them, and I'll kind of have two or three of each, or a couple of each with me most of the time, and then just pick whichever one I kind of fancy at the time. So a real variety of foods. I probably had about 10 of those over the first leg, over the first kind of 15 hours. And then I went mostly onto food from the checkpoints. So that was a bit of pasta. I love yogurts. I don't know why. I could drink pints of yogurt. A few biscuits. Actually, I mean, there's a whole array of stuff. There's normally cheeses there and salami and dried meats, because they kind of showcase on the Tour de Gion a lot of their local foods.
Mm, yummy.
So yeah, you just look at it, it's like a smorgasbord, and you just pick the thing that you want. And as I said, I was mostly on that by the time that by the end of the race, I'd kind of given up on gels because my body had said that's quite enough. I'm not going at a rate. I mean, Damien needs to take in energy probably twice the rate that I do, given the rate he's going. whereas I can graze gently.
Yes, and sample
and don't,
all the food.
And don't have any kind of gastric problems, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, it sounds like it was easy.
It was certainly not easy, but I've made it as easy as it, as close to easy as it possibly can, but it's still very difficult.
I like your style, Basil. And and before we bring Damo back on, what's next for you?
Okay, so to go from one extreme to another, my next race is a track.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
100.
Oh, 100
which
miles.
Which has got 100 miles on the track, which is obviously 0 meters of ascent. And I just looked at it, I don't know, 6 months ago, I saw it and thought, oh, I wonder what's kind of curious, wonder what that's like. So just going to go for it. And then I've got the Centurion Winter Downs 200 in December, which I think is about four or five weeks before the spine. So I'll put it down as spine training.
Yes.
And a test out with Kit. But it goes about 2 or 3 miles from my front door. So I thought it'd be rude not to do it. One time somebody probably can come down and crew me at the in Farnham near where I live. So
whereabouts on the route is your house? It won't be tempting to go home and have a sleep,
so
will it?
It starts near Box Hill.
Okay.
And kind of does, I can't do it, but that it does way. It goes that way round. It goes clockwise. So it starts at about 2 o'clock on a clock, and I'm about midday on the clock.
Oh, okay.
So I'm kind of coming up towards the end. So I'll be looking in a bad way by the time I see somebody in Farnham.
And you won't be tempted to go home.
Do you know, I've never had that temptation before, but I wonder what it will be like.
Yeah.
Because I could just go, I could just turn left here and I'd be home.
Yeah.
I'd be home in half an hour.
Yeah.
There's something I'll put on my kind of to think about list.
Yeah.
How to avoid that temptation.
Yeah. Well, you might just want to go home and have a little sleep for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Might be comfy.
Yes. Yeah. I think there'd be trackers on me, and I think they'd immediately. I'm probably not allowed. I'll check with the rules, but I'm probably not allowed to go that far off route. But actually, it's one where you can have crew, and I think you can sleep in crew vehicle. Mm-hmm. So I might just say, can you come down, bring the car?
Yeah.
And I'll have a quick nap in the car,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, that does sound like a good plan.
Yeah, so it's going to be a slightly different vibe to some of the other races I've done, which are always hundreds of miles away from home.
Yeah, oh, that will be nice, going through your local area, seeing it in a different light. Today you
should... Or no light.
Or no light, yes. Tadeusz, who's watching live, said he thought you meant a 100-metre sprint for that track race that you were talking about.
I wish.
Yes. I don't know what would be harder. No, definitely the 100-miler. Oh, well, thank you so much, Basil. It was really great to chat to you today.
Yeah.
I think we're going to catch up with Damo now and ask him all the same questions over again. It's a shame that we couldn't do it together. But it's been really fantastic to catch up with you and lovely to hear from your training from the point of view of a normal ultra runner. And now we're going to contrast that with what Damien's been doing.
Great, good to talk, and I hope Damien doesn't contradict what I said.
Yeah, awesome. Right,
thank you.
Let's see if this works. See you then, Basil.
Bye.
Okay, let's call Damo. Okay. Let's hope he's ready and waiting for us. And I'm going to change the name up here to say Damo. Apparently it's Damo, not Damo, as I've been saying for many years.
Hello.
No, Claro. I'm just changing your name. Welcome, Damien. Thank you so much for waiting. Sorry that it didn't work on the three-wayer. That's very disappointing.
It was a shame, but I missed the first bit because I was making another cup of tea, but I caught up with the rest of it watching on YouTube, and all the lies and fibs.
Yes, we did see you commenting on the live chat there. so let's just rewind back a little bit and ask you exactly what I asked Basil, basically, to contrast you as elite athlete and him as normal ultra runner. What attracts you to the Tour des Géants? Because it does sound beautiful from what Basil has been telling us.
Yes, let me just... While I remember, let me just correct two things. I don't know where the idea I slept for 5 hours came from.
On your Instagram that you slept for 5 hours.
No. I think the Green Runners said that, but I had no idea where they got that from.
Oh.
I probably slept at the most 40 minutes at the most.
What, on the whole thing?
Yeah, I had four lie downs for about 15 minutes each, but I don't know if I dropped off on all of them. But I'm not really championing that as a healthy way to...
Yeah, we'll say 5 hours then.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have corrected it, but yeah. And the other thing was Basil being described both of you as sort of a normal athlete. He is, you're both underselling him. He is an absolute machine.
He does sound like it.
Yeah, I mean, the Tour de Géant, I will answer your question in a second, honestly. But honestly, it's probably the toughest mountain race in the world. And Basil just kind of saunters around it, you know, and gets it done. And that's and that was, I don't know how many races he's done this year. And yeah, as he alluded, I can't endorse his race schedule that he manages to do, but he manages to somehow do it and get, you know, and not be injured. And so, like, he is a very impressive athlete. I just wanted to sort of say that. And the tour is really tough. And yeah, he kind of saunters along doing it. And he sent me a photo. I was actually on my way home, but he sent me a photo after he finished. And he just kind of had a picture of him on the podium with, on the ramp where you finish, with just the word ouch at the bottom. But, you know, he looked perfectly cheery and fresh. And he's phenomenal. And yeah, showing us. He was definitely more, he looked better than I did when I finished, is one way of saying it. But what attracts me, I suppose, I mean, it's just absolutely gorgeous scenery. It's pretty much mountains all the way. And then I guess the nature of the challenge, the huge distance is intriguing, because, like, can you complete it? How can you complete it to the best of your ability? You know, what sort of time can you get around? Yeah, the crowd, the sort of, it's the Refugios that I really love. They're kind of the crowds in a way. It's not like UTMB where there's crowds in every corner ringing cowbells till you've got a headache. But the Refugios are really welcoming, and they're kind of the crowds and the supporters way up in the mountains. That's great. And there's just a lovely atmosphere to it of more, I suppose, more laid back than UTMB style races. And then also, yeah, it's not as competitive as UTMB, but it's a different style of racer, actually. You know, it's 2.5 UTMBs, so it's a different style of racing, and it's a different type of runners are there, although they're starting to transfer over. It was quite interesting. There was Julien Chaurier and Seth Swanson were both in the race this year. They've both done incredibly well. Julien's won CCC in the past and numerous UTMB top tens. Seth Swanson has been second at Western States twice, fourth at UTMB. So those, I guess, slightly older runners, but amazing 100-mile runners are coming to the race now. So it's only getting more competitive. But yes, those are the main reasons. Yeah.
I was reading your blog and I thought it was nice, like the camaraderie of you guys in the top bit. And you were like, oh, we're all sort of agreeing to have a little sleep here. And, you know, you're sort of chatting amongst each other and you're sort of like agreeing to stay together. And then someone else come up from behind and be the cat amongst the pigeons, as you called it. So I thought that was nice as well. But yes, let's talk about your training compared to Basil, the not normal runner. How do you train for running over so many days with just so little sleep? I mean, you're talking about having 40 minutes that you don't condone on the whole way round. I mean, is it possible to train for something like that, or do you just see what happens on the day and it's always different race to race?
I mean, in terms of kind of physical training, it'd be pretty similar to a 100-mile mountain race training. I suppose there might be a tiny bit more volume or a tiny bit more back-to-back long runs. But nothing epic. I mean, I put it all on Strava. For me, year round, I probably average around, I suppose, 70 miles a week, or maybe a bit less. But then in that sort of key, like 6 weeks out, I'll have some bigger weeks. There probably was a 100-mile week, and I definitely try and get at least 2 weeks of at least sort of 20,000 foot of vert. And really, that's to condition the legs on the downhills. Mm-hmm. But yeah, not too epic. You obviously don't want to get injured or too fatigued. I mean, the big difference I did this year was I did use an altitude tent for the first time. I feel like it did help. I also go to a sauna regularly, and especially leading up to the race, I went pretty regularly as well, which is increasingly studies are showing that's useful. Maybe not just as a sort of poor man's altitude thing, but maybe almost complementary as well. Mm-hmm. So I was doing both those things on top of training. The altitude tent, scientifically, it seems you need between 200 and 300 hours in there to really make a significant difference. And I didn't get that much. But I tell you what, Emma Stewart, the women's winner, she used an altitude tent. Galen Reynolds, who finished third, he used an altitude tent. I think we all, or at least me and Galen, were the altitude center we used. I feel like that did help. But it's not, you know, it's a big lifestyle change. I basically slept on the sofa all summer.
So you just sleep in it, but do you work in it or anything like that? Can you, like, is it like a beekeeper's hat that you could just put around you whilst working at the computer with a little, like, see-through bit?
Yes and no. The set I got sent, you have a mask as well. So you can do, yeah, the best thing is to sleep in it, because then, yeah, you can get 8 to 10 hours of just, yeah, of just pure altitude training. And that's kind of almost the sleep high, train low thing. But then also it has a mask. So I did do a little bit, not very much. It may have only been twice. A little bit of cycling on a static bike, and then you can get some intensity. And then, and also, yeah, you can't ramp it up, the altitude, simulated altitude, you can't ramp that up too high or you won't sleep. Mm-hmm. Whereas on the bike or when you're exercising, you can ramp it up quite high. And also you can just work. Sometimes I just work for 45 minutes an hour with a mask on, and you can ramp it up again quite high then. Yeah. So yeah, I think it was 160-ish hours overall, which yeah, apparently is barely enough to really see significance, but yeah, I mean, maybe it's placebo, but I feel like it helped.
Yes,
and I
believe, yeah.
It's a big thing to think about, though. I mean, for a lot of people, it's simply getting as fit as you possibly can.
Yeah, yeah. It does seem like a lot of effort to sleep on the sofa, like away from your partner for like the whole summer. Unless you're a big snorer.
Yeah, you can get different tents. And I know some people have got, like, you can get one like that will go right over a double bed.
Yeah, I think Killian and Emily have one of those.
They may have, but when I chatted to the scientists at the altitude center, they sort of said, yeah, the thing that normally gets in the way of good altitude training is partners.
Yeah.
My wife wouldn't have been. Yeah. So basically you both live in a tent. So, yeah. Whereas, yeah, I knew that wasn't going to be popular. And also the machine is quite noisy and basically sounds like Darth Vader.
Oh.
So you kind of feel like you're sleeping with Darth Vader.
You are really selling that to us. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, well, it sounds like a massive investment of time. Like, how do you fit all that in? I mean, do you know how many hours you've spent, like, either training, as in actually out running, being in this tent thing, and also there was another thing, the heat, the sauna thing. Like, that sounds like you've had to do a lot of things. How do you fit that in?
I probably couldn't do that year round. But yeah, for a specific spell of maybe 4 to 6 weeks, yeah, I mean, I'm competing with some people who are full time and some people who live out there in the valley. In fact, the guy who won it for the fourth time, Frank Accola, yeah, he lives in the valley.
Yeah,
he's training every day in those mountains or altitude. So, you know, if I've got pretensions of trying to get close to him, I've got to do everything I can here in Wiltshire. So yeah, I'm prepared to. I'm just curious, you know, what's the best I can possibly do. So I'm willing to make sacrifices in that regard. But yeah, I suppose training wise year round, I'm probably only in an average week, it's probably only 10 to 12 hours. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in those peak weeks, it would have got up to 15, 20, maybe 2 or 3 times. And then I suppose the altitude tent, the great thing is you're sleeping anyway. Mm-hmm. So as long as it doesn't interrupt your sleep too much, that's actually quite a clever way to get, if you get the balance right, you know, you're kind of training as you're sleeping. So that didn't add any training time necessarily.
Yeah. And do you do any like speed sessions, like actual hill reps or speed reps or anything like that? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm coached by David Roach. He's very keen on that side of things. I think he believes, I'm paraphrasing, I'm guessing a bit, but I think he believes a lot of ultra runners, yeah, end up slower than they need to be. Mm-hmm. And he definitely endorses kind of trying not to be too far away from your sort of 10K PB pace. And I've learned to believe in that. He's coached me for, I think it must be 3 years now. Might even be 4. But yeah, he's very keen on, I mean, I usually only do one proper workout a week, but there's lots of strides. Yeah, I think it's really important to keep some speed work in there.
Yes, yeah, like one speed work session a week. Brilliant. Tick, I'm doing that. And strength and conditioning. Basil was not a great fan of this, but I'm sure that you will be as an elite athlete. And I'm sure as a coach, you're probably telling us that we all should be as well.
Yes, I am. I am a fan. Well, I had a great chat pre-race with Basil, actually, and he explained that my mistake was trying to go quickly. And if I just chilled and took all these big races easy, I wouldn't have to, you know, bother with all this extra stuff and I wouldn't get so tired. And he has opened my eyes to new ideas. But yeah, I'm a big fan of strength work, especially, I think, as you alluded, as we mature a little. I'm uninjured for several years and I don't know exactly what it is. And it probably isn't one thing. It's probably 4 or 5 things. But some weeks I'll do even 2 to 3 hours, I'm just starting again this week after, having a bit of time off. I think what I find with my athletes is yeah, we're all pretty motivated to run. Like, most of us will get up at 5 or 6 if we have to run, but I won't get up at 5 o'clock to do strength work. So I think the trick is, well, the trick is getting good advice in the first place, so you're doing the right things, but then it's trying to find that the periods in the week that it's most likely to happen, mm-hmm. and then trying to make it just routine, so you almost don't think about it. So it's like Wednesday at 11 o'clock or Wednesday at 8 p.m. That's when you do your strength work. And there are lots of different ways to do it. You know, I do some online classes. I do some one-on-one. Sometimes I go to a gym. Sometimes I go to a gym on my own. I've got some equipment in my garden. I try and leave kettlebells lying around the house. My wife goes around tidying them away, but I leave kettlebells and resistance bands around the house, so that sometimes if I just got a minute or two to kill, I might just pick something up and do a little bit. And that might be a good, yeah, a good way to minimal dose strength work. That might be a way to keep it. But yeah, there are lots of reasons to do it, not just injury avoidance. It's proven to help our economy, and yeah, will most likely give us, you know, muscle fatigue resistance in muscles, leg muscles. And it might, you know, it might even just make us feel a bit better about ourselves. Especially, yeah, most runners are possibly a bit like me and pretty weedy upper bodies. So it's nice to occasionally get, you know, a tiny bit of strength up there. Not that I have it at the moment.
Yeah, that's what I'm after too. Big muscles up top. And so you can't really prepare for, like, can you prepare for night running and sleep deprivation? Yes, you probably can train for night running, can't you? Do you deliberately go out at night, or are you just... you're just fine with that now?
Yeah, I've done that enough times I think if someone hasn't really before, then yeah, go and do it. I wouldn't recommend someone tries to do the tour without having done at least one sort of full run through the night. Ideally several. But I generally love the night usually. I mean, yeah, I've done the spine several times and stuff, so it's normal for me, but the night can be really special. Everything goes quiet. The world becomes more simple. Hopefully some stars come out. But yeah, so I don't specifically, the sleep deprivation is really tricky. Yeah. I mean, it could easily be sort of self-sabotage if you, you know, push the sleep away during training. So I don't do that. I think really you've got to rely on previous races. So hopefully, yeah, someone should have done at least 100 miler, which will nearly always go through a night, unless they're super fast. And that's useful. And then maybe ideally a 200 miler in less mountainous or less severe terrain, or at least a second night. I think the second night is when things start to get tricky. So ideally some practice of that.
Did you see anything funny this time on the Tour de Gion?
Yeah, there was a guy in a hammock halfway up a mountain. I pointed him out to Galen and Galen Reynolds, and he couldn't see him, but he probably needs an eye test. And last time round it was inflatable penguins and sharks.
Wow.
Especially the Michelin man. But this time actually it was more of a sort of internal sense of I lost the feeling of who I am. I honestly had this sort of I don't know who I am. Now I appreciate we don't go through every day going I know who I am, but yeah. I just suddenly had this feeling of I don't know what am I doing and who am I. And I was really relieved. I think Sophie Grant, I saw her post-race interview and she said she had a similar feeling. So I was really relieved. And also in this race, I've only had it at this race, is this, you get a strong sense of deja vu, especially the previous year when I hadn't actually been there before. I had really strong deja vu in places I'd never been. And it just seems to last and last. And it's annoying. It's quite annoying. I know these things sound trivial, but when you've been out there for days on your own, they really mess with your mind. But really, this time it was the not knowing who I am. And I apparently said to, I got to a checkpoint near the end in the dark, and I said to Galen Reynolds' mum, who was crewing him, that I'd come to a crossroads of 5 paths, and they all led to infinity.
That's very deep.
Yes. So, yeah, I've had a bit of a, yeah, the tour does seem to invite mind-warping experiences.
And how did you deal with that then and there? Did you just be like accept that and just keep putting one foot in front of the other? It sounds like that's what you did.
Yeah, I mean, this year it was easier in that I was anticipating, you know, strange feelings like that. The previous year I was more troubled and messed up. And I honestly started feeling, what if I can't make new memories? What if everything now is deja vu? I was that hard. But this time I was like, kind of like, this is strange, but you've sort of been here before. So basically I thought, as soon as I can, have another sleep. So yeah, it was only 10 minutes on a bench, but I'm pretty sure, yeah, a lot of those weird feelings went after that power nap towards the end. So A, it was more familiar, and B, I had more of a sort of idea of something to do to combat it.
Yes, yeah, it does sound like it just comes with experience, that whole thing. You can't really prepare for it until you're just there and you just got to go with it. But feet.
It helps.
Yeah, feet you can prepare for. So do you ever get problems with your feet? Did you used to get problems with your feet and do something differently now? How does it work for you?
Yeah, I mean, some people will hate me for this, but I don't seem to get many issues nowadays. I think I definitely, earlier on in the sport, I would definitely get blisters. It's fairly rare now. I did have one at the end. I had one, I think, under my heel or at the side of my heel, maybe. I tell you, Gaylor Reynolds had much worse feet. And we know that was because it was very hot on the first 2 days and he was cooling himself down a lot in streams and so on. And I think that water was, going down his legs and making his feet wet. And sometimes you sort of don't realise till like halfway through the race. But no, mine were great. I did change shoes only once in the end, partly because my feet had got wet. I changed socks and shoes. But no, I don't know if it's luck or, I just know some shoes and socks that work for me now. So it's luck slash experience.
What shoes and socks do you wear?
Both years I've worn Innovates Trailfly G. Their names get longer, their shoes. I think it's the G Ultra 280, which is like a fairly cushioned shoe. And normally I wouldn't be attracted to those extra sort of maximalist shoes. But I love the 270, and that is what I changed into when I changed. But the 280 just offers a little bit more protection, I suppose, for sort of rocky downhills or when it's loose. And just occasionally the 270, I like the fact I can feel the ground in it. But towards the end of something like this, your feet are getting quite sore, and actually feeling stones and rocks, I don't always want that. So just that extra bit of cushioning was actually really nice from the 280. And socks, just standard Innovate socks, really. But I've worn them for years, so I know they're, I guess if it's going to be warm, you want something breathable. Something like also that's not going to let your feet slip around much in your shoe. So a bit of grip, a bit of breathability, they're probably the two things to look for. And I did switch to a slightly more sort of softer, more comfy pair later on. But I think that was just because that was what was nearest. But yeah, that stuff seemed to work.
Yeah. And do you use poles? I'm guessing that you use poles on long stuff like this. Do you generally use poles? Basil didn't seem to use poles unless he was on the Tour des Géants, which sounds very impressive to me, having heard he's done the spine.
I guess if there are long, steep climbs involved, I think, well, studies now have shown that, they're going to help. So UTMB, Tour des Géants, things like that, definitely using poles. But I always, put them around, put them away if there's a downhill or a flat. But for the climbs, everyone at the front is using them. I think if I'm honest, I think if people don't, they're making a mistake. I'm sponsored by Leckie. They're pretty good poles. I do use them at the spine, but that's slightly different reasons, actually. That's partly to test the bogs out, see how deep they are. But also you get, when you're on flagstones, it can be pretty slippy and icy, actually. And one slip has ruined many people's races, actually. So actually the poles, if you slip slightly, you've got the poles sticking the ground to sort of stop yourself. It's actually pretty effective sort of extra braking system. That could save your race several times over. And then also, as you get more and more tired, you're more likely to sort of lean or bend forward, and your breathing's not going to be as good, and you're using your quads then more than you need to. So poles could keep you, if used well, more upright later on, and that could again be helpful. So I'd say steep mountain races and the spine is usually where I use them.
And then food. Do you like to sort of help yourself to the smorgasbord of food available on Tour des Géants like Basil does, or do you take your own stuff and religiously eat every 30 minutes, 30 seconds? How does it work?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. I like to have a few of my own snacks, but I don't like to carry very much. So And yeah, I do have an alarm for every 30 minutes on my watch. I'm religious about that. And I was very lucky. I had AJ Handspell crewing me this year who put in an amazing effort. So the plan was, and I didn't, despite all that, I didn't eat as well as I would have liked. I think they're roast potatoes or boiled potatoes. And he added, yeah, some kind of vegan cheese and salt and flavored them really nicely. So they went down very well. So yeah, I feel like white carbohydrates, you know, white rice, white bread, they tend to go in really well for me and for a lot of people. And then certainly some fruit, bits of fruit. And then I do carry some gels. I'm sponsored by Vela Forte, who, yeah, make nice chews. I did have some Spring Energy gel. I know Basil took them. Spring Energy, them sort of natural and nicer flavors. I liked them. I used a few other gels as well. So, but what you've got to think about as well is if you're climbing in the heat, you don't want your tummy to be working too hard on, you know, digesting a chicken. So that's got to be really, that's got to be gels and liquid calories. Liquid calories is a really good solution. So yeah, again, Vela Forte, do some of them, some carb powders, add some of that going in, but often just fruit juice as well. You know, nicer flavors and it's natural and stuff like that. So yeah, all of that. And then tried to eat stuff on the race, which was normally pasta and tomato sauce, which usually went in pretty well. But I could have, bananas and cola, if in doubt, bananas and cola. Yeah, that was largely it.
Yes. Oh, it sounds delicious. Do you have any more plans that you are able to tell us about? Have you got anything exciting coming up for 2024? Or this winter? Anything this winter?
My focus now is I'm going to do several sort of local trail races, really short ones, which, yeah, I probably won't do very well in, but we'll really, just to really switch things up and work on speed again, because this stuff, you know, it does slow you right down. So, yeah, really excited to, yeah, just doing some local races. And then, back into the spine in January, because, you know, there's not much else to do in January. And, you know, it's just, I think it's like Ian Keith says, if I wasn't doing it, I'd be dot watching obsessively anyway. So it's kind of, you might as well be one of the dots.
Yeah.
jumping back into that.
Yeah. And then any plans for the spring and summer that you're able to tell us about, or anything secret that you're not allowed to tell us about?
Not yet. That's as far as I've got for now. I guess I'm debating, do I go back to the tour? It's hard because I feel like that was a good performance of maybe the best I can do. So going back in some ways doesn't make much sense because, you know, can I do any better? And then you're more likely to be, I don't know, feel disappointed with how you're doing and maybe not complete it or something, or just not enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think with the tour, it is a kind of, you know, buy the ticket, take the ride, because it's just such a hoot anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm undecided, but I'm leaning towards doing that again, I suppose. But we'll see. I don't have to decide till January.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all my plans at the moment.
Ah, you could go and do a Basil and just bob along and eat all the nice food and take 7 days of it.
I think I should maybe listen to him. I think he's much smarter than me and maybe everyone else actually. That is an option.
Oh, well, that's a super useful training advice slash what you do for training for Tour de Gion. Was there anything else that you wanted to just add about Inter Ultra before we finish? We got what it was about from Basil, but yeah, just like the reason why you started it maybe and how pleased you are with how it's going.
Yeah, I think we're very happy with supporting at least 40 athletes so far. I think we're very happy with that. I think we're very happy with how many brands and coaches and even sort of dietitians and psychologists and other brands have just got in touch offering services. You know, that's been really heartwarming actually, so many people believe in the idea. I think our next challenge is trying to reach out further to get the people that maybe are more on the fringes of running or newer to running, mm-hmm. From maybe less privileged, you know, areas. But it's really exciting that, yeah, already supporting 40 and we can support more. Really, you know, it was he probably too humble to say it, but it was Basil's idea.
Oh,
so yeah, really
he
grateful
didn't say
he
that.
Really grateful, yeah, he came to me with it, and he is doing most of the work. He and a small group of other amazing people do most of the work. I do almost nothing but claim the credit. So yeah, it's been really grateful to everyone who's supported it, it's hard to think of a negative from it, really.
Yeah, it's amazing. No, Basil didn't say that it was his idea at all. I'm very annoyed at him for that. Yes. Oh, well, that's amazing from Basil, and it's great to have you on board as well. We just have had one live question from Tadej, who says, "Are you going to do the Barclay Marathons again?" I completely forgot to ask that.
I think I would be. I'd be curious to try again, because it was sort of, I wasn't exactly tantalizingly close, but it was possible. I think it felt like it was possible. So I would be interested in trying again sometime.
Yes. Oh, excellent answer.
It's one of those things I can't say much more than that.
Oh, well, we will be following you. You can follow Damien really easily on Instagram. It's Ultra Damo. Well, I would call it Ultra Damo personally.
Yes, it is. I think there's an underscore in the middle, but it probably is easy to find.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Damo and Basil. It has been an absolute riot to chat to you both. I'm sorry that we couldn't do it all together, but it's been brilliant just chatting to you individually. Thank you for sharing all your training secrets for the Tour des Géants and all the amazing work that you're doing with Inter Ultra.
Thank you very much indeed, Claire, and chat more soon.
Yeah, lovely. I will see you soon. Bye, guys.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.